Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by the Director of Inside Sales Ops at Salesforce. You might remember these guys because we've had Lars Nelson and Curran on the show. This is, I'd like to introduce somebody who not only works at Salesforce, for somebody who this show has a lot of respect for, but also as a fairly young gentleman, built a giant fucking team at Blue Wolf, which is now a big part of IBM. Travis Henry, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Colin. Thanks for having me, and big fucking team. I like the sound of that. Certainly part of the experience, and excited to talk shop with you today on all things SDR and messaging and personalization.
Yeah, man. Anytime I get a chance to talk to somebody that's built a team your size, there's always so much that we can learn. So before we jump in, I think there's one sort of piece that feels like it's been kind of itching at you. Like what's happening in the sales world that's really sort of getting under your foot?
Yeah, it's a good question. So when I think about sales development today and some of the trends going on over the past few years, probably the biggest advantage that's come into the world of sales development, but also the biggest challenge that's come in, is what we think of as sales engagement platforms. So when you think about your outreaches or your sales lofts or these tools that really allow SDR teams to automate messaging at scale, it's done a lot of great things, right? It enables you to be consistent in your process, to control the messaging more, to really scale up a team more efficiently. But something I've seen that happens particularly at hypergrowth companies and those scaling really quickly and adding a lot of heads and maybe having a lot of turnover is a watering down of messaging at the same time. So whether I go into an early stage company as a consultant and they're just figuring out for the first time, what is our messaging and how should we go to market and how should we run campaigns outbound, or I'm going into someone more mature who's grown really rapidly over the past 3 or 4 years, the trend I'm seeing more and more is how do we stay sharp and thoughtful and focus on the value of our messaging when we're going out to the market and talking to prospects to really get their attention and resonate with them. The biggest fear in my mind and a big pitfall that can happen for companies is they turn their sales development reps, really expensive, talented, thoughtful humans, into mini Marketos or mini Eloquas, and they're basically blasting out to the market through a channel that we all know is getting only more and more crowded, and that channel's email. So one of the challenges we help companies with, among many others, is how do you continue to keep a thoughtful and valuable content approach and messaging approach while taking advantage of these hugely beneficial systems such as sales engagement, but also when you think about the data stacks being put together and a lot of that orchestration work being done across systems. So I think that's probably one of the biggest trends I'm seeing today.
It's really interesting. And I really love the conversation we had about sort of how, and this is sort of what the episode today is going to be centered around, which is sort of how do you take advantage of the automation that's available to us without automating too much and really sort of maintaining that human touch?
Yeah.
So I think it's so important. It's so well said. We don't want to be turning these people that we've invested so much time in, so much energy in, into mini Marketos.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's a few best practices here and a few steps through the process that I've learned either by, you know, just figuring it out in my career, but particularly by going into companies and advising them and seeing what works and what doesn't. So what we've come together with at Salesforce is really more of a structured approach to creating that messaging, developing it, and then actually employing it in your systems of record. So one place I always start, so when I go into a company for the first time, one of the first workshops that we hold typically, and this is thinking about an SDR team, but it's a buyer persona or ideal customer profile workshop. And again, this seems consistent even if you're just starting out or you're a more mature organization. But you'll find that when you sit in a room and you pull in sales leadership, but you also want to pull in marketing, and you start to ask the question of who's your buyer and what do they care about, right? Really basic stuff. Oftentimes what you'll hear back is actually product benefits. It's maybe roles and responsibilities of those individuals. But what you hear far less often is here are the responsibilities of our buyers and our different buyer personas. And then here are actually the pains that we know they experience. And then the final step there is actually what is the cost or the impact of the pains that they have. So one company that we work with is a company called MyVR, and they're in the short-term rental industry, software industry. So they help, you know, Airbnb, VRBO, anyone with rental properties on these different channels to manage across them. And interestingly, in this workshop, one of the threads we pulled on was, sure, they have an operations person who is responsible for making sure bookings work well and guests are communicated with on time. But they actually, we realized in the course of this workshop that they have a technical persona they're selling to as well. And even though it's the same exact software that they're ultimately selling to this customer, it's a completely different message that resonates with that technical buyer versus the business side. And that's true not just for MyVR in this one particular instance, but really when you look at most companies and you dig into the use cases, you find that there are multiple unique buyer personas that you need to cater to. And once, so that's really the first step, is just understanding what those buyer personas are. And then once you get down to the pain and the gaps, that's what's ultimately going to feed your sales development team, right? Oftentimes, another mistake that companies make is they put so much pressure on their SDRs to actually sell their solution and to go out and be subject matter experts and to sell the solution top to bottom, when in fact, the best SDR teams are just really good at identifying gaps and generating curiosity. And when you really define your buyer personas and the impact of the pains you know they have, you can feed your SDR team with much sharper, more intelligent questions and messaging that they can go and bring out to those prospects. And that's going to generate the curiosity and identify the gaps that get where you want to go, which is setting a qualified appointment on the calendar and giving your salespeople the chance to actually sell versus putting all the onus on your SDRs to do that.
100%. And I love the way you sort of frame it up, is the SDR's job is to identify gaps, generate curiosity, make sure that prospect shows up to that first meeting. Such an important way, or such an important way of describing it, right? So succinct. The thing that I love about why this is important is if you're not defining these sort of the personas and the use, like for each use case, and you know, some are going to have, you know, buyer personas that are specific to a use case. Some are going to have personas that are specific to an industry, and there's a million different ways you can slice it. I don't really have an opinion on, you know, one way being better than the other, but I think I love the fact that you're starting with defining, let's look at as a company at a strategic level, what is the right way to slice these things so that we can give our SDR teams the best chance at identifying these gaps. Because if you're not telling them, hey, here's what to look for, here's why, right? If you're not filling them in with all this message, with all this information, their messaging is going to be garbage.
Yeah, totally. And when I say it starts with defining these personas, it really is starting as simple as getting your sales leadership, maybe a top knowledgeable sales rep, product marketer, and a couple other folks in a room to start talking about these things and really pressure testing yourself on, are we talking about product features and benefits? Are we talking about simple roles and responsibilities? Are we getting down to the why behind our product and behind these different personas? And that's more of the qualitative side, but I know listeners of the podcast, and myself included, love things that are more actionable and tactical, and how can I get into my systems and start to be smarter and more educated about this process? Something I really like to do is to pull all of my closed won deals out of Salesforce and actually look at the opportunity record. And then also above and beyond that, look at the meetings that led to those opportunities. Most companies take the first step. They say, who is the primary decision maker on most of our deals, right? Who's actually influencing and driving the decision to a closed won opportunity? And that's relevant. That's a relevant question because, you know, that person ultimately needs to sign. But we all know when we're selling bigger, more complicated solutions that no longer is it a single buyer decision or even a couple of buyers. There's an entire buyer's journey that we need to understand. And oftentimes, the most relevant person for your SDRs to go after up front in the buyer's journey, it's a different person than who's ultimately signing the check for the CFO or the decision maker. And what I like to do is actually pull the roles of who have we been successful at getting qualified appointments with and generating pipeline with, and who actually gets us into the conversation. So when you think about your MedPick qualification framework, it's really starting with who's that champion as well as who is our economic buyer decision maker at the end of the day. And there you can get a little bit more quantitative around this exercise as well.
That's great, man. I love the starting in Salesforce. My one worry is you look at the Salesforce record or like the Salesforce object in most companies and you see very minimal information. I don't want to go too deep into this. I know you're somebody with quite a bit of experience just given your history with Blue Wolf on the Salesforce side, but can you give me like a 30-second answer? Like what are some things that people should be making sure they're keeping track of on that op object?
Yeah, I mean, it's two words, contact roles. And that's, I know you've been an individual contributor. I have as well. It's just, it feels to your salespeople like, oh shit, it's just another thing I have to do and put on this deal. What's the value of it? Educate your sales team around the value of contact roles and put it in the lens of, it makes your life easier when you're having deal reviews and you're speaking to where you're at in the opportunity cycle. Ultimately, it serves the salespeople. And oh, by the way, it gives the business more insight into deals and who's driving them. So that's my short tidbit. I'll get off my contact role soapbox.
That's awesome. Are you just linking them as contacts or do you actually create a special field for them on the object itself? It says economic buyer.
Yeah, it's just the out-of-the-box contact role functionality on the op. And you can say, you know, decision maker, influencer, what have you.
Awesome.
But yeah, back to the idea of how do we get really effective messaging at scale and even with automation. Another exercise that we actually did at Blue Wolf, and Blue Wolf was tough, right? Because I think your messaging and your value props change and maybe even get easier when you're a traditional SaaS or software company and you have that really tangible thing that you can dangle out in front of prospects, which is more often than not the demo. So, hey, I'd love to get you on a call and we can show and tell around our software and we have this tangible thing we can point to. We had a really interesting challenge at Blue Wolf because we're a services company. Mm-hmm. So we had to train our SDRs on how to effectively reach out and provide value around really just business outcomes, right? And thinking about how they can use, in this case, the Salesforce.com platform in a more efficient and intelligent way.
Because if people haven't heard of Blue Wolf, basically one of the largest Salesforce consultancies in North America, in the world maybe?
Yeah, in the world, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Got bought by IBM back a couple of years ago?
Yep.
Were you pre-IBM?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, for about a year.
Okay. Right on. And so just so people can understand the context here. In case they're watching the video, they're like, this is a young guy. What experience does he have? I said, you're a big fucking team. Give me some context before we jump any further.
Yeah, good question. So yeah, Blue Wolf and I came into the organization. There's maybe three BDRs just in North America, not much going on, if at all, globally. And there was a huge inbound lead triage and prosecution issue happening, but there was also little to no outbound motion in place at all. And my mandate was, number one, to fix the inbound problem and get more intelligent about lead prosecution and conversion and marketing ROI ultimately. And then what it grew into is building a team that can really do outbound effectively into our target addressable market. So over the course of 3 years, we took that team from about those three reps to somewhere in the 35 rep range globally across North America, EMEA, and APAC. Kind of that typical, you know, Series B, Series C expansion that companies do internationally. And taking the SDR team to actually generate, I think our figure was $100 million in pipeline over that period, which is pretty healthy for this first time function and kind of figuring it out as we go. I think that's the biggest benefit to working with a consultancy like Salesforce, is that you can try and iterate and fail a few times and eventually get there in maybe a 1 to 2 year period, or you can bring in folks who have bled before and made all the mistakes and answer. So that was the ride at Blue, which was a phenomenal experience. And lo and behold, most every company goes through the same growing pains and faces the same issues at different points.
100%. Yeah, we see it over and over again, and you can try a couple times on your own, and you know, maybe you'll stab yourself a few times and then get it right, or maybe you'll stab yourself a couple times and then bleed out. And we see that a number of times. So yeah. Totally agree. All right. So bringing it back to the interview. So you were talking about the example at Blue Wolf and how as a services company, you were trying to help their messaging stand out.
Yeah. And one of the things we did that we deploy very frequently within our client base is broadening the SDR messaging conversation outside of your typical players. So a lot of companies say, all right, SDRs, here's our buyer personas, value prop, et cetera. Go create your own sequences and emails and see what works. Don't recommend that strategy. The next level up is they'll say, all right, SDR leader or sales leader, marketing leader, let's think of our messaging and start to craft these emails and value props and plays. That's good. What we did that was really had a really interesting effect and some positive externalities was bringing in our actual subject matter experts. So at Blue Wolf, this was our SMEs within the delivery organization. So these people weren't salespeople by any stretch of the imagination. They were the ones who would get in front of C-levels at our customers and paint the vision of our product. And typically companies don't think to bring in their SMEs into a sales development prospecting conversation.
Question, what's yep. What's a SME?
Subject matter expert.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool.
And in our case, like I mentioned, it was consultants. But if you're an early mid-stage startup, it might be your technical co-founder or your head of product or whoever really understands the nitty-gritty of your market and your use case. And what was interesting is we brought in, just as an example, we brought in our head of analytics to work with the SDR team and get in a room and start to talk about all the use cases and the vision and the value of analytics and how that related to our customers and what are the gaps and pains they feel today. And we got some fantastic messaging out of it. But the interesting thing that happened was that SME actually came back later and I would be getting calls and emails and they'd say, hey, what customers have we booked meetings with this week? What kind of analytics conversations have we had? And you start to see this really cool thing happen where folks in your organization who weren't actually involved with sales really until later in the sales cycle or from a delivery capacity, they were getting interested in the top of the funnel and they were getting excited about the sales development team that they might not even have known about before. And you start to see interest and excitement build around this function, which I think you and I both know, Colin, often goes taken for granted or it's just not even acknowledged or understood within a lot of companies. It's just, it's the people with the tough job booking the appointments for our sales folks. But this was a really cool outcome where, you know, others in the organization, product people, consultants, got excited about what the sales development team was doing. And we got fantastic messaging out of it.
And it doesn't even have to be just between the sales development team. We see this huge gap between the product side and then the revenue side. Right. The product marketing tends to be the gap. Product marketing, sales operations can sort of fill a similar role in the context that I'm thinking, Right. And there's, I find that, you know, especially, you know, you've got a Series A, Series B back company. You've got, I mean, obviously you stumbled onto a market opportunity somehow. I imagine you talked to customers. I imagine you did all the personas. I imagine you did a total addressable market survey. I imagine you've done all this. Yep. But I think the thing that's missing in so many of these cases is exactly what you're talking about, is that connection between the product team and the revenue team, right? Yeah. And I've kind of talked about it before when we talk about sort of like early in the startup phase. It's not really customer development until they're closing the deal.
Yeah. Right?
So you've got to get the revenue team involved. And I won't go out and stand on my soapbox because I can get spun up on the subject. But I did want to add that we are, if you're like, hey, how do we, if you're interested in going deeper on the, like, how do we go into buyer personas? How do we talk and discover some of those pains? I'm actually going to get our product manager. He does quite a bit more, but he's been doing, it's called Jobs to Be Done Theory training at our company. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to get him on the podcast at a later date. I'm trying to do it next month, but he's pretty slammed. So we'll see. But he's been doing that for our team and it's been helping phenomenally. I think I've talked about it more than enough times on the podcast, but there's a great video. If you haven't heard me talk about it, just Google, go into YouTube, Google milkshake and jobs to be done. There's a pretty hilarious video that's worth looking at there. And then there's tons of good reading. If you're interested, just drop me an email and I'll shoot you some books. But anyway, let's come back to the sort of execution side of things, because I think you've done a great job of sort of setting up. We've got our personas laid out. We've got everybody in the room. We've got our subject matter experts. We're learning from them. We're sort of extracting what are the jobs to be done? What's the pain in not solving it? You know, sort of what are the gaps that our SDR teams should be looking for? How do we take all that and sort of build that into sequences that don't just turn into like click, 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 click waterfalls?
Yeah. And I'll caveat what I'm about to say with the very real fact that you'll probably have a long tail of your market, even if it's within your target addressable market, that there may be just lower fit, lower value accounts that rightfully deserve more of that, let's call it automated approach from your sales development team. So there's a place for that, certainly, in a lot of companies' go-to-market approach.
Yeah.
But when we move up market a little bit and we go to our tier A or tier B accounts, and we don't just want to count our activities, as I like to say, we want to make our activities count. You want to build an environment for your SDR team where they're actually excited about personalizing emails. So just to get tactical, when you're building your sequences or your cadences and the templates within them, really, you want to think about it in terms of the 80-20 rule. So think about personalizing or automating 80% of your email copy or your sequences in terms of the actual content, and leave 20% where the onus is on the sales development rep to personalize the first 10% and the last 10%. Because typically you'll find that that middle chunk of content, you can get pretty darn relevant in terms of buyer persona, in terms of industry, in terms of account or an account-based approach, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But it's really that first 10% that tells the recipient, the way I always phrase it is this coming from a human? And being someone who receives prospecting emails all the time and sees all of the different approaches from the market, you know, like your gut, it's a very human thing. You know if this was sent in an automated fashion or if someone took some level of time to write you this. And if it's the latter, then that, it changes the entire attention span of the recipient. Otherwise, in my opinion, the rest of your content, it can be phenomenal, it can be valuable, but it's going to get written off. And one of the favorite examples I like to share when I'm talking to sales development teams about how to get creative is when I was back in the day at Oracle, as an SDR, reaching out to startups in Utah. I was hunting after this really high growth, high value account. It was a startup, and I was going after the CTO, and I didn't have any luck at first. I was doing my best to get him on the phone, no luck there. Lo and behold, technical buyers don't like to pick up the phone. My emails weren't really resonating. So I just pulled up Google and I searched the person's name. His name is Tim. I forget his last name, but I think the first or second result on Google was his personal / professional blog. And the title of that blog was a Monty Python reference, actually. It was Tim the Enchanter. And I found that, and it didn't take me more than 3 minutes of work. And that's all I needed to see. And it gave me a quick read on his personality and something that would grab his attention. So the very next email I sent out, it had the subject line, "Summoning Tim the Enchanter." It's a little cheeky, you know. I don't like to go too far on that when I'm advising teams on building messaging, but it's just enough where the second, like, that email's getting opened, right? And he's going to do it, and he's probably going to respond to it as well. Whether or not that's positive is another question. But lo and behold, it was like 15 minutes later, I have an email sitting back in my inbox. Not only did he love it and appreciate it, but we got the appointment in.
Nice.
It's really getting your team excited about, where can I find those quick wins? Like, you might have heard of the, you know, 3 facts in 3 minutes research methodology for sales development. Any way you want to formulate that, just help your team be quick and thoughtful about, like, those tidbits they can pull out about a particular prospect that really personalizes it and puts human context around the outreach. That's what's important.
I want to say it's probably pretty obvious, but give me, in less than 3 minutes, what's the 3 facts in 3 minutes research? Is it pretty just self-explanatory just as it is?
Yeah. So 3 facts in 3 minutes is basically a response to what can happen when you try to encourage personalization with SDR teams. You'll find that you say, hey, make sure your outreach is thoughtful, make sure you're doing research, Mr. or Mrs. SDR. And they'll go to reach out to somebody, and a click into LinkedIn, into the company's website, into their blog post, it turns into 30 minutes of a rabbit hole of research. So it's really an attempt to say, bucket your time around that 3 minutes of research and keep yourself accountable to it. And really just look for 3 quick facts that are relevant to this particular prospect. And then pop those into the record in a way you can reference in subsequent outreach. So not only are you covering research for this touch, you're covering research that you can quickly reference and implement in your subsequent touches.
Love it. Such a Salesforce guy, hey?
Yeah.
But you got a feel for everything.
Yeah, yeah. Just another piece of unsolicited advice to SDR leaders listening is get operationally savvy and system savvy. I was forced into it because I just had to figure it out, but that's been a huge boon in terms of my career and being able to run teams effectively. And one other piece on this idea of getting the SDRs to be thoughtful, be creative, and create human context, it actually, that can go back to even your hiring profile. So one of my pillars when I looked for good sales development talent, and it's one I don't really hear a lot when people talk about hiring SDRs, it was creativity. So how creative and out of the box are you as a thinker, in addition to your time management skills, your sales skills? If you actually optimize hiring around creativity, you find some really neat outcomes in the laboratory of experiments in your SDR team when it comes to messaging and what works and what doesn't.
That's awesome. We've done, I know internally, we've got a couple of really creative people. We've tried custom poems, haikus for individual prospects that bombed.
It's experimentation, not just doing what works.
But we've got our most recent hire, our most recent SDR. I don't know the right way to phrase this. She was trying to be an actor before. I think she might still have gigs on the side. So however you want to frame that up. And so she's got acting talent. And so I think we're going to leverage that into some pretty interesting video recordings for her prospects, but we haven't decided exactly how to craft those yet, but she and she can perform. We actually made her perform as part of our interview. And it was not the easiest interview. Let's just put it that way. She did a great job and we obviously hired her. To me, speaking of sort of performance, this is my half-hearted attempt at a lead in. Talk to me about the Shakespeare Award.
The Shakespeare Award. Yeah. So I talked earlier about how you can get creative with really bringing in horizontal functions in your company into your sales messaging. So going to your subject matter experts or product people and bringing them in. There's also this concept of vertical integration into that messaging and getting visibility and excitement built vertically in your company around what's working and what's not. And one of the ways that we did this at Blue Wolf was we actually had an award that we would give to the email that basically had the highest conversion rate. So be wary of the reply rate on emails, because if you say offensive things to people, I'm sure you're going to get a very high reply rate. Are those responses what you want? Likely not. But your highest converting email into qualified appointments or opportunities or whatever your outcome is, build some kind of creative award around that to encourage your team to try to outmaneuver each other and get competitive around creative messaging and creative plays and calls to action and value props that you might not have thought about before. And the team would get absolutely stoked about receiving the award. And we even had, I'm big on doing physical, visible things even within the office. So we changed out the trophy or the statue or whatever we used. But at one point we had, like a Mayan warrior with a javelin that was, 3 feet tall that you could put on top of
no way.
The top performer's desk. And the whole office could see it, right? All sorts of functions and leadership as well.
Congratulations. You just lost a full square foot of desk space. Because you're awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But that recognition is really big, especially when you think about, I'm a younger person for sure. When you think about the values and what's appreciated and what's motivating to this current generation and newer generation of SDRs, typically earlier on in their careers, the social connection, the recognition is almost just as, if not more important than the monetary compensation, at least in my experience. So things like the Shakespeare Award or any kind of visibility you can drive, not just within the team or within functions, but actually vertically in your company up to the executive level, that goes a long way, and there are a few things easier to implement or do. So what I would also do is, if we just had a killer response from a high value account, even if it didn't convert into a meeting, it just said, wow, you've done such a great job following up, or, oh my gosh, this is valuable, but 6 months is more appropriate. I would just forward that on to our CMO and our CEO, and they would eat it up. They would get super excited about what was happening, and they'd say, oh, that's so cool. And then they would forward back to me, people prospecting them, and we'd get ideas of what was working and what was not there as well. And then you get that really neat relationship between the C-suite and, again, the sales development team, which is driving air and life into the company and in the form of pipeline.
That's awesome. I love that you're creating that sort of virtuous cycle. Love the Shakespeare Award. I think I'm going to steal that idea and use it myself.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I do want to get tactical here, because I sense this is an opportunity for us to kind of go deep here. Yeah. You sort of hinted at, and so I love how you, when you're looking at writing an email, it's not just an email template. you first start with the persona, and that persona is specific to the use case, potentially specific to a vertical. So a use case within a vertical. So that's how specific the, let's call it the generic template is, right? Yeah. And that's the 80%, right? And so that's already fairly dialed in, right? We're not just sending one template for the whole company and we blast it out to everybody. Is we've got, you know, a vertical or a sub-vertical of, you know, 100 accounts or 800 accounts or whatever that is. And you've got templates specific to that sort of subgroup within your overall sort of ideal customer profile or total addressable market. So now that we've got all of those different, let's say you've got 10 different verticals that you go after, or 10 different use cases you go after, however you look at it. Within that, if you're, we're talking with, talking about our SDRs, we want them personalizing the first 10%, the second, and the last 10%. I was going to say the second 10%, but then I would have just said the first 20%. Math was never my strong suit. It's the way I went into sales.
You're forgiven, Colin.
Thank you so much. At least I got like 10 and 10 is 20, right? Like 10 and 10 is 32, like, you know, 11%. So talk to me about, how do you teach SDRs to personalize their emails? Because you've obviously, you've got the experience of ramping up 30 some odd, well, probably more than 30, because I imagine there was a little bit of churn on the team. Yep. So let's say, you know, double that, you know, you've helped quite a few people and plus all the clients you work with.
Yes.
Talk to me about what are some of your favorite ways of teaching reps to personalize emails?
Yeah. So funny you mentioned, yeah, the churn in sales development is difficult, right? I always like to say, if I do my job right, I'm promoting on all of my team and losing them. And if I do it wrong, then they're trading out and failing. And either way, I'm losing headcount at all times.
it's an intentionally leaky bucket.
Exactly. I think the, well, number one, so one tactic that you can use when teaching reps how to personalize is just to educate them on the importance of A/B testing. So what that can look like is, let's just take subject line, for example. If you have an email sequence you've been using, actually working with the rep to understand, okay, what other kind of subject line can we use? And then this is where sales engagement, again, is super valuable. So we can run these mini kind of science experiments today very easily by spinning up just a second variable of our first email or our second email or what have you. And we can send 50 of version A out to 50 different prospects, 50 of version B out to 50 others, and we can measure the results. So that, I can't emphasize A/B testing enough when it comes to really honing in on what messaging will work or not work. And then how do you actually train SDRs to personalize? It goes back to that efficient research methodology. So there's a piece here around data and serving up data to your team more effectively so they're not hunting and pecking and searching for contacts, which I can speak to in a bit. But it's being prescriptive above all else about how you go in and find relevant pieces of research. For example, if I was if I worked at Optimizely, right, or another company that focused on optimizing websites and front-end experience for users on a website, that's something that I can go to as an SDR very quickly, and there's particular things I can look for on that company's website. For example, if they don't have a website, well, now I know how to personalize my first line, because I'd say, wow, I just searched for you and I couldn't even find your publicly available website. Or I found it and boy, we have a diagnostic tool that shows you're well below our benchmarks, what we're seeing in your industry. I'd love to set up a follow-on to talk about how other findings that we've had and how you can improve. So that there's a myriad of ways to go about that that's really particular to a business. Another one is in that vacation rental business I mentioned, right? If there's bad reviews about your company and your rental experience from guests, I can find that super quickly as an SDR, particularly if I know keywords to search for and systems to use. And now I'm flipping the conversation and that first 10% in my email from, hey, I saw you went to Michigan, go blue, to, let me tell you something that you may or may not know about your business. And again, spark that curiosity and validate the gap that you may have in your business that, oh, by the way, we might have some thoughts on and best practices to share about. So I think above all else, it's making them efficient about finding what's meaningful to your business and then pulling that in quickly into the outreach. Or you can just find weird personal blogs like I did with Tim the Enchanter and use that as well.
Or you could just try summoning Tim the Enchanter on every subject line. Because you know, I don't know, like there's got to be, I'm guessing, I don't know the actual numbers. There's got to be at least a few million World of Warcraft players.
Yeah. Right?
It was like in our generation, I think it was one of the most popular games in the world. So, you know, there's, that's got to hit on at least like six other people. That's going to work beautifully.
Yeah. And this isn't at all my idea, but from, I was just at the Topo Summit, which is a sales and marketing conference in San Francisco. And Kevin Dorsey from Patient Pop, who leads the SDR team there, was talking about messaging. And something that was, I learned for the first time was thinking about the cultural language of your target audience, right? So I think his example was like dentists. And if you go online and search dental humor, there's this whole subgenre of language and inside jokes and references that you can actually make and pull into some of your outreach to make it that much more interesting. So I really love that. So shout out to Kevin Dorsey on that one.
Nice. I can't remember the episode number, but we had Kevin on super early back when he was at Snack Nation, and he talked coaching and all that, and like basically had to onboard and coach on an ongoing basis. It was a great episode. I feel like I learned a ton. It helped me sort of raise my coaching game.
Awesome.
I love this. We've done a lot of the jobs to be done sort of research. And we've done like a little bit of, you know, we've had John Selig on the show, and he's a comedian, and he talked about how to like make your emails a little bit funnier. But I never thought, hey, if you're going after dentists, let's look up dental humor. I know a couple of dentists, I love them, but they're weird people. and every, you know, profession, you know, whether it's a CFA or a salespeople or a salesperson, right? Like we all have our own weird quirks that we identify with. And yeah, that's a really great way to sort of bring that level of personalization. It's one of those ones that really scales across sort of industry. But it does, like, I think your initial point was really key, which is there are no top 10 ways to personalize an email, because I think what you're saying is the best form of personalization is going to be specific to that company that you're prospecting for.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, the humor is good and the human context is key, like we talked about earlier, but at some point you also need to drive business value. You can't get around that, because this is a B2B outreach. These are people with full schedules, with a million priorities, right? So you actually need to offer value and speak to pain and problems that they might be experiencing. So yeah, absolutely. It varies business to business.
Very cool. Okay, so we've got that's probably the most important piece, and we're not going to talk about that anymore, because, you know, it's hard to, we could go through 1,000 examples and still only cover, you know, a small percentage of every use case of everybody that's listening. So what's some other ways you teach reps to personalize their emails?
Yeah, I think, so in terms of personalizing emails, one really interesting strategy, and this was actually championed by Lars back when he was at Cloudera with his inside sales team, but something that we've deployed with our client base to really dramatic effect. And that's actually bringing in your executives into the world of the SDR and doing what we like to call sniper campaigns, or executive to executive outreach. So this is a very particular type of play that you can run. And I would only run this to your top, you know, X number of accounts. So maybe your top 50 or top 100 global accounts. But the strategy is that you go to your CEO or whoever's influential within your company and relevant to your prospects, and you build a very tailored, very specific sequence that's account-based to the counterpart executive at the prospect account. Now, you're using the persona and you're working with the executive within your company, and they're fully aware of the campaign, but the actual execution work is being done through the SDR. So you provision your mailbox of your CEO or your SVP of sales or whoever's relevant, and you'll basically operationalize that through your sales development team. And it's, like I said, a very specific, very tailored outreach that's executive to executive at the company to talk about really high-level strategic topics that affect their industry, that affect their peers, and to open up that dialogue. And more often than not, the CEO of Bank of America is not saying, yeah, I'll take 15 minutes on a call. But what almost always happens is they'll refer you down to one of their lieutenants or right one of their major executives and say, hey, this is a conversation we'd love to have or love to open up. And boom, you have a meeting booked on the calendar. And again, that goes back to this more internal organizational piece of how do you get your executives excited and amped up about what the SDRs are doing. And you'll find that, you know, the CEO is like, oh my God, we got the meeting with, you know, Daimler Chrysler, and that's amazing. And what else can we do? And then other people are asking to run these campaigns also. And it gets really, really exciting. So that's another area I do personalization on.
Cool. I love it. So let's keep going. Cause I'm just gonna just try and grind all of the great knowledge out of you. So talk to me about some other ways you'd like to personalize emails.
So I'd actually pivot and say that email is a phenomenal channel, and it's one that's core to pretty much every sales development team today. But the great research put out there by Topo and the Bridge Group and anyone who studies data sets of cadences will tell you a single channel approach is not going to be as effective as a multi-channel approach, period. Totally. And a significant margin. So while emails play a big role and there's a ton to be done within the email channel, something that we've seen be more and more effective, and this goes back to breaking through that mini marketer email overload problem, is direct mail. So right back in the day, you could fax people, maybe even before I was born, you could fax people or you'd send them handwritten notes through snail mail. And then there's the rise of email in the 90s, right? And that's just become so saturated. And something we piloted at Blue Wolf to great effect was this direct mail strategy of actually using physical goods or letters to get your message across to really key stakeholders. And your outreaches and sales lofts of the world now, you can coordinate those touch points, physical mail touch points, into your emails, into your phone calls as part of the overall touch point strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, something that I would recommend here is being really thoughtful about the direct mail strategy, which is, you know, how can you be intentional with what you're sending in the mail, where it's not just, I mean, you can send them a mug with your logo on it and say, hey, we'd love to fill up your cup with coffee sometime, let's chat. But what I found to be really effective is either putting out thought leadership or leveraging real life events with direct mail. So a great example from Blue Wolf is one of our biggest lead drivers every year was a state of Salesforce report. It was a survey of the whole Salesforce ecosystem and how everyone's using the platform and optimizing and what are the trends, et cetera. We had an online version of that certainly and webinars and everything associated. But we actually had this beautiful textbook-like printed version of the State of Salesforce report that was, you know, nicely printed, beautiful graphics, really informative and rich content. And we put that into the hands of our sales development team to send out to key decision makers. And the way this ties back to email personalization is we'd send that. We didn't call them the next second and say, hey, are you on page 2 yet? And I'd love to set an appointment with you, 60-page textbook. Instead, we would, you know, schedule an email follow-up for a week later. And it was, hey, hope you got the State of Salesforce report. As a marketer, I thought you'd find page 73 insightful, because it looks like you're focused on broadening donor contributions for your nonprofit. By the way, this is what we do. Here's a call to action. Would you like to meet? So you can tie in really creative ways those purposeful offline touch points that I like to say have a 100% open rate, because you're not going to, that package will get into their desk, but tying it back into the rest of your touch point strategy. So that's a little bit of how to tie in direct mail with your email. I'd say the other thing that was really effective is high level CEO dinners or invite only events where you'll have your executives or your sales team on the ground and actually running those invitations through a direct mail channel. That's been super effective as well.
And I've heard I like the Salesforce report. I've heard of, you know, I talked to John Miller from Engageo, Marketo. Yeah. I mean, he did the same thing with his book, you know, at certain accounts, he even had custom versions of his book made up for like a certain account. If he was trying to sell to, I don't know, let's say he's trying to sell the Marketo, yeah. You know, he's got the Marketo edition. What was it? The clear and concise guide to ABM, right? Amazing strategy. And you're just taking this one step further and saying, hey, you don't need to write a whole textbook. You can just do an annual report, mail that out, and you do a high quality. This looked like a textbook.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. And then again, I think the key point is how you don't just throw those things out and expect some kind of return directly from them, but yeah. You use it as a launching point and a way to create your own compelling event for your SDR team that's actually meaningful to your prospects.
That's awesome. And I love that sort of pattern is you email it out, you give them a week to read it, and hey, and then you follow up and saying, hey, as a marketer, I thought you'd find X relevant or X, the content on page X relevant because why?
Yep.
Love it.
Exactly.
I mean, do we need to touch on phone? Obviously, we've talked multi-channel, phone, social, email, direct mail, make for a better package. I think that's pretty generally accepted. You want to jump into phone real quick here? Any special advice for the newbies or even the more advanced listeners?
Yeah, the one thing I would say on being effective with phone is for outbounds, you always want to warm up your account very intentionally with email coverage, with paid advertisements, with retargeting, right? You want some sort of relevancy before you're completely going in cold with a call to that account. So that's number one. Number two is just as you're very thoughtful and intentional about email copy, you want to be as thoughtful, intentional, and structured with phone conversations. So don't just leave your SDRs hanging with, hey, here's our 15, 30 second elevator pitch and a couple of qualifying questions to ask, including, God, I hope not, budget. And saying, hey, yeah, go figure it out on the phone and have a conversation. You'll find that not only is that ineffective, but like it stresses reps out in an already very difficult job.
Yeah.
And instead, you want to be prescriptive and structured about what are the defined segments of a phone call and how do you get through those? And then what does the objection handling look like underneath? And don't be afraid to prescribe around that and just practice each one of those segments bite by bite until your team's really sharp and confident and unshakable on the phone. So that's what I'd say for phone. And the final main channel is social. And the biggest mistake around social is treating it as a resume when you're an SDR. So saying I blew up my quota last three quarters and I'm an SDR at Acme Corporation. There's a place for that and it makes sense if you're looking for a job. But if you want to use LinkedIn as a vehicle to set appointments and be successful, orient it around your customer. So put in your subject line or your headline how you solve problems or what are the gaps and problems that you do solve, and just make it really relevant for your prospects. And then finally, marketing teams, more often than not, they fail to capitalize on that social feed as a channel. So if your SDR team is doing their jobs right, they're reaching out with relevant messages to prospects on LinkedIn and trying to connect with them oftentimes if it's appropriate. Once they're successful at that, everything that goes into their social feed, oh, by the way, it gets transferred and it's passive prospecting to everyone they've ever connected with. So we've had a ton of success with the marketing team actually running scheduled deployments with pre-made snippets of what they can post on social and keeping that consistent and not putting the onus on the SDR to do too much.
So marketing is putting that out on behalf of the SDR through their LinkedIn. Awesome. Exactly. And I love what you're saying, you know, about involving marketing. I think there's so many ways where you can get, you know, that extra synergy out of, you know, having the sales team. Even look at, man, if you're an SDR and you're looking for that little extra bit, you know, go look at your company's social feeds. Go look at the people that are interacting.
Yeah.
Right. You want to talk about, you know, a strong trigger. If they're following your brand, if they're interacting with your brand, if they're already talking about you and they're not yet a customer, man, that's not low hanging fruit. That's fruit that's like on the floor rolling around at your feet and you're just walking around in it.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Cool, man. I think I want to transition to data because we sort of alluded to it earlier. It can be, you know, it can be make or break. If you just say, okay, I'm going to buy a list, I'm going to do all this research and you bought, air quotes here, crappy list, then, you know, none of this is going to go anywhere. I'm a firm believer that there are no crappy lists. There are some very shady providers for sure. There are good ways and bad ways of handling data. I've heard great things and terrible things about every major data provider out there. And I think a lot of it comes down to how you use it and when you use it and why you use it. So I want to hear about, like, talk to me about how you sort of, I don't know, fill in the data infrastructure around an SDR team.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it kind of sits behind everything we've talked about because if you don't have people to reach out to, you don't have information about those people, it's really tough to be relevant in terms of your campaigns and your plays that you're running outbound. So just the basis of it, we have the luxury today of having, you know, curated databases like discover.org and like Clearbit that we can plug directly into Salesforce or Outreach or whatever tool we're using and actually pre-seed and pre-populate our target market with our buyer personas. So as long as you've done those preliminary and predecessor activities of defining those things, you can go into discover.org, for example, and you can pull everyone who has a very particular title or a technographic install base or keywords associated with them that are all are relevant to your product, right? So you can automate much of this. And one of the traps I've seen companies fall into is just dumping contact data willy-nilly into their CRM and
willy-nilly without care for the world or the
willy-nilly.
Yeah.
into your CRM. And it's to a point where your team can't actually consume it. So something that an exercise you want to do is what we call a reverse waterfall model. So it's backing up from what are our bookings targets or our pipeline targets or whatever the outcome is for your sales development team. And looking at the conversion rates up the funnel all the way to how many contacts over what period of time do we need to actually touch and can we touch to achieve those outcomes? And once you have that set up, then you want to think about deploying your data insertion, data append strategies to fill that pipeline for your team. And there's a lot here that you can do automated. I'm also a really big fan of just getting scrappy with data because as soon as it's in your system, it can be stale. Things aren't always accurate. Sometimes there's manual work to be done. So something we did at Blue Wolf was we were big users of Chatter, again, to go back to Salesforce. For those who don't know, Chatter is like Twitter/Slack inside of Salesforce. So you can at mention people and like reference them on particular accounts and things like that. We just had a team that was remote. I don't think anyone ever saw what they looked like. And we would at mention them on a very particular account we were going after. And they would curate the account for us with the defined SLA of, I think it was 48 hours to get all the contacts we needed populated, cleaned, and verified into that account right before we kicked off a campaign. So that way, and they had access to data enrichment tools and all of the above, but Colin, you and I both know sources like LinkedIn have a ton of good data, very difficult to mine in the automated fashion back to your system of record. So there's almost invariably this human element that goes into it. And the more you can specialize that out with lower cost resources outside of your SDR team, the more efficient your SDR team is going to be, and the more clean and relevant the data is going to be as well.
100%. And I think the more, this is something that gets skipped over, and I know we're kind of near the end of the episode,
yep,
but I just want to stress this, right? You're paying these people, you know, upwards of six figures if they're on target, you know, in some markets, maybe more, right? You're nodding, so I'm assuming I'm correct there. Is the best use of their time to be tracking down contacts, searching around in Zoom Info, Discover Org, Clearbit, et cetera? Or can you outsource that and get them a, you know, think of it as like a virtual assistant, only you've got an army of them and you've got, you know, the efficiency of the systems and scale that you can create with an outside team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've even seen companies stand up a formal data stewardship team, and that becomes a playground for college interns to come in, for brand new hires with zero relevant experience, people that just want to get their foot in the door and do work that is meaningful, but is a little bit manual and kind of grunt work as an entry point to actually building them as talent in the company. So that's another model too, if you don't want to go full outsourced.
That's fantastic. I think it depends on the model, obviously, because if you're, you know, if you're paying these people, again, $100,000 a year to source data, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yep.
Again, if you're hitting the import limits, the import like file size limit in Salesforce, because the list is so big, you're probably doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Last piece on data research. Talk to me about intent data. Do you use it? Is it relevant?
Yeah. I think intent data, the short answer is it's a part of the stack that's increasingly relevant, but again, it's just part of the stack. So all intent data will do for you, in addition, I view a lot of marketing activity the same way. So if you think about white paper downloads or webinar attendance, these things don't say, hey, I really want a salesperson to call me right now, right? That's not necessarily the indicator. The way I always frame this to sales development teams is it's another point of reference. It's another piece of information you can use to tailor your outreach if and when it makes sense. So for intent data, just to level set with listeners who aren't familiar, companies like Bombora or Sixth Sense or Signal HQ, they will curate all of the searches being done by a particular corporate entity. So let's say IBM's a target account for you. You can actually see and sniff if IBM's searching for your company name, your solution type, or your competitor names. And you can see if that's surging or declining over time. And the biggest area that this actually adds value into a sales development team's workflow is it solves for a lot of the moment in time piece. Because great if you have a strong use case and you know the company is a great fit, but they literally just yesterday renewed with your competitor and they have a locked in year contract and there's no interest or activity around looking for a new solution like yours, it's probably not going to be the best use of your time, or at least you shouldn't prioritize that account. Whereas if you know this company is in the market and they're looking for things, then that can factor into your overall account prioritization score, along with, I know a lot of the things Kern talked about on a previous episode of, you know, what's their firmographic data? What's their technographic data? What else do we know about them? And then this intent data piece fits in as one part of that mosaic to prioritize your team's time.
For sure. And I've even, you know, we had Jack from Everstring on, and he talked about how they actually use some of that intent data from Bombora to actually personalize their emails. Yeah. And so they'll actually, and maybe not, personalize is maybe not the right word, but just make it, take that one. It's sort of like automated personalization. You know, if you've, if they're interested in this signal, then we're going to change up this one variable. And so they've got these custom variables matched. And I think in some cases they actually even had some triggers where if it scored high enough, okay, it's fully personalized, but it's just, it's another layer to the stack is what you're saying.
Yep. Exactly.
That's great, man. Travis, we're coming to the close. I want to finish strong with the lightning round, and then we're going to get you, make sure we get you that cold call segment, get you an opportunity to promote the brand. But before we do, in 2 minutes or less, I got three questions for you. Are you ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Only one breath of air is allowed. Can you hold your breath for 2 minutes?
Definitely can't, but I'll pass out on camera.
Okay. Sounds great. All right. How do you get people to reply to your emails?
You have to offer value and create relevancy.
How do you handle the brush off on a cold call?
That you got to do one of my favorites. It's called the negative reverse. It's an old Sandler sales technique. And basically what it is you assume the worst case scenario that you know can't be true in terms of, oh, well, I'm sure that your company is running 100% efficiently as you want it to. No one can answer yes to that truthfully. So it gets them engaged.
Gotcha. And finally, what do you need to do when you're trying to push for the end of the quarter?
When you're trying to push for the end of the quarter, so for sales development teams, that's the time where you get the executive team involved and you really pump up the energy and you get excitement around everything that's happening. And it goes from a weekly or a monthly cadence into a daily cadence of targets and rewards and recognition. And again, you bring in leadership and you get behind the SDR team.
Fantastic. I love it. Let's move on cold call segment because I know you got a hard stop and I want to make sure we honor that. So time to pitch Salesforce. I'm going to be a CRO at a fast growing tech company based within, I think as Lars said, within two blocks of your office, sort of between Market and Fifth. So if your office isn't near Market and Fifth, just stop listening right now. Ignore everything Travis is going to say.
Please don't. That's just Lars's preference. We service the Bay Area and even beyond. But let's go for it, Colin.
Sure you do. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. This is Travis with Salesforce. You mind if I take 22 seconds to let you know why I'm calling?
22 seconds. I'll give you 13 because I'm just about to head into a meeting.
Perfect. So, Colin, reason for my call today is that I saw that your company just received a Series B funding. Typically, when I talk to revenue leaders like yourself, you're starting to think about how do I scale a revenue engine efficiently? And we actually advise sales leaders at companies like Procore and Uber Freight to do exactly that. So I was just hoping to ask you a couple of questions and see if it made sense to do a follow-on.
Man, I'm trying to find ways to shut you down here, but I'm just drawing blanks here. This sounds awesome.
Awesome.
Travis, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been unreal. If people want to get in touch with you, we'll throw a link to your LinkedIn there. If they're interested in Salesforce or what you were talking about, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
Salesforce.com. So that's just the word sales and then source.com.
Beautiful. Yep. Travis, thank you so much.
Perfect. Thanks, Colin.